Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. Nice to have you here on this Thursday. We are live in the Quicken Loan Studios. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. What's cracking? Ladies and gentlemen, I give to you the squatter. He's front row. Check him out. If you're not following me on Twitter, then you didn't know this. The squatter is in the house. James Kelly is in the house. A tremendous Friday to you. If squatter is here, it's Friday. No, Rome, it's not Friday. It is for me, clones. Today is Friday, all day. Because I'm not in tomorrow. And no, I'm not being a punk. It's not a sick day. Yeah, I sound good today, don't I? I can't hear a word I'm saying. Am I talking right now? I can't hear anything. Anyway, big salute to the squatter, James Kelly. Fighting through it, getting down here. Because he's not coming in on Friday if I'm not here. And today's my Friday, so James Kelly is here. Front and center.
God said me.
Sandwich.
God said me.
Pinky the squatter. The USS Peyton Manning, according to my friends in New York. What's up, JK? James Kelly in the house if you need him. All right, cell phone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. Next segment's open phones. If you want to get on the air today, I'm not in tomorrow. I'm not in Monday. I've given myself a long holiday weekend. Again, this was already planned. Not because I'm ill in a little bit. I'm fine. Man, I'm all hyped up on every over-the-counter pharmaceutical there is. It's going to be a great show. Hit me up. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Always do that. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. The interviews look like this. Coming up at 40 past hour number one, my man John Morosi is back. MLB Network, NHL Network reporter. That's coming up at 9:40 Pacific, 12:40 Eastern. Second hour is wide open. Third hour on this Friday. It is my Friday. It's Friday. Is always busy. Alvy, have you got the week that was for 4 days?
Yeah, dude, I do.
I've got Bob Melvin, Oakland A's manager, top of the third hour. Also in hour number three, Chad Millman. He is the head of media for the Action Network. He joins us in the third hour. We're going to talk some legalized gambling with him, what that looks like, what that feels like, how that's going to impact the way we watch games, report on games. Chad Millman, really interesting guy. That's coming up in hour number three. So all of that straight ahead. If you know what you want to talk about, do not waste any time. Hope you denimed up. Hope you backed it in. It is Friday after all. Well, it is for me.
Today's Friday.
All day, right, Hood? All day, it's Friday.
Today's Friday.
Hey, Hood, if you don't mind, why don't we start with Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals?
Snap face.
Good thing about being as jacked up as I am right now with this cold, I sound like Snap Face. I sound like the Hood. I don't even have to do my impression. I could just talk normally. I'm kind of like half Alvin and half Belichick. I sound like an old, curmudgeon-y Alvin. I should do the entire open like this. Mill. The crap that I got to put up from this guy.
Snap face.
The things I put up with this guy. I mean, how long have I worked for Rome? Mill. All right, Snap Face. Let's get started. Cleveland, Boston, Game 5. Last night's Game 5 did answer the question. It answered the question. Question being, is it too much to ask to have two exciting conference finals games in a 24-hour span? The answer, of course, is yes. It was way too much to ask because Boston's 96-83 win was not exciting. It was actually pretty boring. And don't get me wrong. Boston's good. Boston's nice. Jason Tatum is becoming a star right before our eyes. That 24-7-4 performance in Game 5 of the conference finals when he turned 20 less than 3 months ago is macho as hell. But let's not confuse his great performance with that being a great game, because that was not a great game. Far from it. I mean, Boston did what they do at home in the playoffs. They won. Cleveland did what they do on the road in this series. They disappear. I mean, I don't get it at all. The home team has won in a blowout in 5 straight games. I don't understand that. I mean, I know there's somewhat of a home court advantage, but it's not like it was back in the old days when every arena was weird and funky and creaky and you had to travel by train and the Boston Garden had terrible visitors' locker rooms, dead spots on the floor, cold water coming out of the showers. It's not like that anymore. Teams charter jets. They stay in 5-star hotels. And the arenas are pretty much all fairly modern. In other words, there is no excuse for Cleveland no-showing the way that they just did. Again. And it's not good enough to just say, well, it's a road game. And that explains that. Because it doesn't. It doesn't explain how they shot less than 27% from the three. It does not explain how Kevin Love was 2-for-7 from deep. Jordan Clarkson, 2-for-7 from deep. J.R. Smith, 0-for-4 from deep. 1-of-6 overall. 2 points. 2 points. Tristan Thompson, 1 point. George Hill, 7 points. I can do the math for you. Hell, Hawk could even do that math. 3 guys in the Cavs starting lineup had 10 points. Not each. 3 starters combined for 10 points.
The simple math says that's 50 hours on hold.
Right. The simple math says 10 points combined for 3 starting players. But that's just Cleveland doing what Cleveland does when they're not in Cleveland. And LeBron finally did what he never does. He got tired. He looked tired. He was tired. For a second, it looked like leading the league in minutes in his 15th season, and then leading the league in minutes in the playoffs, and having to strap an entire team on his back and carry them through the first 2.5 rounds of the postseason may have finally caught up to this guy. Maybe. Possibly. Probably. Hey, if I'm LeBron, and I see 3 of my teammates in the starting lineup combined for 10 points, I'm just going to nap it out right there on the floor. You know, just kind of curl up on the parquet and get some shut-eye. Because that's clearly what the rest of his crew is doing. How is it possible to have 3 guys combined for 82 minutes and manage just 10 points? LeBron still had 26. He had 10 rebounds. He had 5 assists. And he shot 50% from the field. And he was not going to admit that he was tired, even if you know he was tired.
I have my moments. But I think everybody at this point is tired. Worn down or whatever the case may be.
All right, so right when he's on the verge, right when the guy is on the verge of admitting that he was tired, he completely rejected the whole notion.
I'm fine. And I didn't mention the fatigue either. Well, one of you guys did. I'm fine.
Well, it doesn't matter who mentioned it. There's a chance that it might be a factor. Hey, look, I don't care if a guy's 35 or 25. Given that workload and the fact that he's got to carry the other 4 guys on his back like a piano up and down that court every single night, that would gas anybody out, including the guy who spends upwards of 7 figures annually on taking care of his moneymaker. That's not on LeBron. And knowing that there might be the possibility that the cyborg that goes by the name LeBron James may be in need of a charging station, if there was ever a game to make sure that the shot-blocking, 3-point shooting machine, Kyle Korver, got plenty of minutes than it had to be last night. But he only played 19 minutes and didn't even enter the game until the second quarter. And by then, the Cavs were already getting blown out. So it's pretty confusing, right? Well, don't look for Ty Lue to make it any less confusing when he went to explain it.
Rotation seemed a little jumbled. Kyle didn't play in the first quarter, and Kevin and LeBron on the bench to start the fourth. Did something get out of whack for you, or is that the way you wanted it to go?
Well, initially he's been putting Olajay in, so that's been kind of Kyle's matchup when he comes in the game. But he didn't play him tonight, so, you know, it kind of, you know, threw us for a loop. But we got Bron out with 2.5 minutes, and I started the fourth. He wasn't ready to go, so, you know, same thing happened game, I think, 1 or 2. I can't remember.
Left side.
Brad Stevens not playing? Semi Ojeleye threw you for a loop? What does that even mean? What's that got to do with anything at all? Look, I love Ty Lue. I love Ty Lue. Ty Lue has forgotten a hell of a lot more basketball than I'll know in my whole lifetime. But if I'm him, I'm not going to explain my moves based on what Ojeleye did. Since when did Semi Ojeleye become the determining factor in anything? I know teams like to play matchups, but if we're matching up with Ojeleye now, I mean, come on. Don't get me wrong. Nice-ish kind of player, but not exactly somebody I'm building my entire game plan around. I'm not trying to scheme against Ojeleye. How did Ty Lue, who seemed to come up with a scheme in Game 3 and Game 4 to get his guys going and lock up Al Horford, just get turned inside out by Ojeleye? Look, I know Brad Stevens is a genius, but can he also do mind control? Did somebody on the Cavs coaching staff really say, you know, it'd be great to have Kyle Korver out there, one of the all-time great 3-point shooters, but damn, Shemmy's not out there, so we can't do it. I mean, does that mean that if Stevens does not play Marcus Morris, that you're not going to play LeBron? If I'm Stevens, I try that in Game 6 just to see what happens. Because as weird as this series has been, that might actually work. And as boring as this series has been, it might actually be interesting. Your thoughts on that? 1-800-636-8686. I can't lie. I'm pretty happy with that take. I'm pretty happy with the start of the show. I'm pretty happy about everything right now. Sure, Rome. It's because you have tomorrow off and Monday off. Well, yeah. And why am I doing that? The same reason anybody does anything, because they can. Why do I take so much vacation? Because I have so much vacation. And if I don't take it, I lose it. 1-800-636-8686. This guy gets in early all the time. I'm not sure if that's by design or what, but he's back. Dear Jim, everyone could clearly see that my performance was severely lacking due to complete exhaustion. I love my team, however. The over-reliance on me to stretch myself to cover the entire surface and hide glaring weaknesses has caused me to become tired, sick, and weak. Signed, the makeup artist tasked with applying 400 square feet of rouge and foundation to the squatter's dome. Signed, Denlesks, flawless epidermis. And congratulations first, Lesks, on your flawless epidermis. The makeup artist, of course, is Samara. Samara's worked with me for, I mean, over a decade. Samara's done every TV show I've done in the past decade. And I'm sure that when she came in, Samara was probably thinking to herself, man, it's a good gig. It's a real easy gig. I show up, Jimmy gets his TV face cake. This will be easy. And then one day she comes in, the first Friday. She's never discussed it with me, but I bet she looked at James Kelly and thought to herself, oh, hell no. That's Samara. That's her reaction. My tweet is on TV right now, CBS Sports Network. There is Samara. There is Pinky the Squatter. There she is using every bit of foundation she has on his head. Never mind, save some for the rest of us. There's not going to be any left for the rest of his face. By the time she's done hitting up that flight deck, he calls a forehead. JK is the best. This email says, Dear Rome, Rome wasn't built in a day, and James Kelly's forehead was not painted in a day. Get that poor woman a paint roller. Excuse me. Just playing through it. Playing through it. Yeah, I'm bumping up against two things right now. His forehead and whatever it is that's wrecking me internally. It's a strong open, right? Yeah, but you got to play the hot hand, right? I mean, I don't want the open to end because what's coming after that probably won't be as good. All right, in addition to Kelly's forehead, my illness. God, you know, I hate to bring everybody down with an anthem take, but there has to be an anthem take. And I just want to tell you right off the top, some of you are not going to like my anthem take, period. You're just not. I think I've got it right, but I know a lot of you aren't going to like it. Keep that up. Let me check out the tweets before I go to break. At Table Slam Fan tweets, damn, Jim, that voice is Scotty Farrell filling in today.
Fat ass.
Fat ass.
Fat ass.
I do sound like Scotty today. A little bit. A little bit. I love Scotty Farrell, man. He's had such a good career. Scotty. Scotty goes way back now. Scotty's been in this game a long time. If you tell me I sound like him, I'm going to take that as the highest compliment. Love it.
I hope you're in your car listening to me right now, you
fat ass. Exactly. You be sure to listen to Scott at night. What else we got? Alan tweets, Van Smack, to the USS Peyton Manning, back it into the dock today because it's Friday. I'm assuming. And the inside information, Hawk hit me up yesterday. Hawk hit me up last night and said, hey, point of clarification. If it's your Friday, is it all of our Friday? Are we denim-ing up and backing it in? I said, absolutely. Like Team Dime. Mike gets an Escalade. We all get Escalades. XR4TI. Rome backs it in. We all back it in. Oh, you don't get a car from me. You get the right to back in your car. Daniel Wheatley tweets, Jimmo, give yourself a drug test for all the cold medicine you must have bought at different locations. Sign the 909. You attempting to make a meth joke, Dan? No, I'm not going to say that I'm not all hopped up on cold medicine. I am going to say I bought them all at the same place. Did not have to make multiple stops. Hey, pimp, give it up. Admit that you're taking a vacation to go spelunking in one of the squatter's toboggan hats. Jeff from the 919. Or James Kelly paying real estate taxes on his forehead. Or James Head Kelly hiring a landscape company to get a haircut. Here we are. We're not doing a whole show of that, all right? John Morosi coming up at 40 past. Bob Melvin, top of hour three. Chad Millman in the third hour. It's been a long winter, but summer is here. It is, believe it or not. You never know it here in SoCal where it's raining, but summer is here. There's a lot to do, a whole lot of places to go. The Memorial Day weekend is coming up. The top priority on your list should be getting your car in shape for the season. You'll find that the easiest place to do just that is at O'Reilly Auto Parts. From changing the oil and filter to inspecting the braking system and replacing cracked wiper blades, you'll be amazed at what can happen to your car when you put it in front of the professional parts people. Next thing you know, you'll have your car ready to hit the road in great condition in no time at all. At O'Reilly Auto Parts, you'll find thousands of parts and accessories at guaranteed low prices. Everything you need for whatever curves the road throws your way, you'll be set. And, of course, plenty of expert help. So the best way to start an unforgettable summer is on Memorial Day. This Memorial Day weekend, get your car, your truck, your SUV, or your van in prime condition for the hottest time of the year. Take it to O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you've seen great video of NYC Fleet Week. Fleet Week. If I'm not mistaken, I would think that's in honor of James Kelly's forehead. Fleet Week.
That's right.
I haven't done my anthem take yet, but a lot of you are already calling in and want to talk about that. Where do you come out on this? Did the NFL get it right? Did the NFL do the right thing? Or did the NFL get it all wrong? Did they butcher it? I've got thoughts on it, a full take on it. If you want to talk about it, call me right now, 1-800-636-8686. John Morosi is coming up in about 15 minutes. Quick note, let me ask you something. What if a quarterback completed 80% of his passes? Or what if a point guard hit 80% of his shots? They'd be more than all-stars. They would be legends. Well, now, when you're hiring, you can play at that level as well. Because 80% of the employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through that site in only one day. With ZipRecruiter, one click, post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. Powerful technology learns what you're looking for. It identifies the people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job. And you can try it for free right now. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. I've used the service myself. Do it. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. Use it. All right, so really quickly, I just want to put a hockey topic out there too. We've talked about this team throughout the entire postseason. They did it. The Capitals, they did the damn thing. They did it.
We did it!
That wasn't easy, was it? It wasn't easy because there's no way that the Washington Capitals would make it easy. But after they've been counted out so many times in this postseason alone, they are on their way to the Stanley Cup final now. They lost the first two games of the first round at home to the Blue Jackets. Remember that? They were down 0-2, going back to Columbus. And not only did it look like they were not going to reach the Stanley Cup final, it looked like they were not even going to make it out of mid-April. They get hammered early. Head coach Barry Trotz probably would have been gone, and then they'd have to take a nice long look, a hard look at their roster. They'd have to bust that thing up. It didn't work. But then they win game three in Columbus, and they do it in overtime. Then they rip off three more in a row. So from down 0-2 to winning in six, the Caps actually had momentum. Then they blew it in game one of the Pittsburgh series by squandering a late lead once again. And it looks like same old Caps. But then they battle back. They beat their playoff nemesis in four of the next five games. So all of a sudden, we're all thinking, they're not the same Caps. Then they steamrolled Tampa in the first two games of the conference finals, and it looked like the team finally had arrived. They're finally on their way. Self-actualization. This is the team we've been waiting for. But then again, nothing for the Caps is ever easy. So they lose the next three. They're hanging by a thread going into game six, and it looks like they're going to have the most Cap-like implosion ever. All they do then is win game six 3-0, setting up last night's game seven in Tampa. When, to be honest with me, Caps fan, you were expecting them to no-show. You were expecting them to bring you this close, to get within 60 minutes of a look at the cup, and then completely mess the bed, fall apart on the big stage. But they didn't. Not only did they not fall apart, they came out on fire. 62 seconds into the game, Ovi did this.
A hit at center as Kunitz was hit shoulder to shoulder by Tom Wilson. Ahead on the right side, and now Kuznetsov across to Ovechkin. He scores! He scores! 1 minute and 2 seconds into game seven. The great eight has made it 1-0 Washington!
Holy crap. Now that's how you start a game seven on the road. That's how you start a game seven on the road. With Tom Wilson decking a fool and Ovechkin lighting the lamp. That's Capital Hockey right now. Beat the crap out of you and then score on you. And if you didn't know that that was their plan, then your name must be Braden Coburn. Because after Coburn and Wilson were sent to the box for 2 minutes each in the first period, the second their time was up, these guys come right out and they drop gloves immediately and they go right back at it. Now, that's the kind of fight that you don't see very often in the playoffs, especially in Game 7. But you know Wilson was not going to back down, and you know Wilson was not going to lose either.
The lane closed quickly, and now a fight as Coburn and Wilson are going to drop the mitts as they come out of the penalty box. Little surprising this would carry over given the stakes tonight, but both seem to be pretty incensed. Fighting majors here in the first period of Game 7. Wilson and Coburn continuing, and as Wilson coming after him with a couple of lefts and a little spin move and all of this, center stage, and then Wilson ends up with a takedown at the end.
I cannot stress enough how surprising that would be, or at least ordinarily. Game 7? Conference finals, these guys come right out of the box and go looking for each other. And if Coburn were looking to get his team fired up, then that backfired because instead he got his face crushed and the Caps kept on rolling. Two more goals in the second, they go up 3-0. And by that point, the only suspense was what would the final score be and whether Ovechkin would touch the Prince of Wales trophy. Final score 4-0. And just like that, you can write the Capitals into the Stanley Cup final, and you can erase all your thoughts about the same old Caps, because this Caps crew had chance after chance to show that they were the same old Caps, and they didn't. They didn't fold. They didn't give up. They didn't give in. An amazing job. And now they're on to the final. All right, quick timeout. When we come back, we'll talk about that and some baseball. John Morosi joins me next. Second hour is wide open. If you're waiting for a chance to get through, that's the time to do it. Bob Melvin in the third hour, but right now, I've got a sports update for you. Here's the
live from Southern California. This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
The PGA Tour's top golfers, including Webb Simpson, Ricky Fowler, and Jordan Spieth, take on the Colonial Country Club at the Fort Worth Invitational. It is this weekend on CBS. Make sure you check that out. Good way to spend the long weekend. 1-800-636-8686. Pick me up here. Pick me up with a strong telephone call. We are efforting John Morosi. He will be joining us any second now. A's manager Bob Melvin in the third hour. The head of media for the Action Network, Chad Millman, in hour number 3-2. We're joined right now by somebody who contributes extensively to the NHL Network, MLB Network, Fox Sports. He is a true Renaissance man. He is an expert on the classic PBS show, Ghost Rider. You can watch John contribute to MLB Network and NHL Network studio programming throughout the year. Plus, NHL Network will have live pre- and post-game coverage on-site throughout the Cup Final. John Morosi is my guest. John, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, I'm doing great, and the Ghost Rider line in my bio is probably the most cherished of all, and I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, you got it. You earned that. Listen, because of your versatility, John, I could start anywhere, but why don't we start with the Vegas Golden Knights? You were covering them during the conference finals, and you cover pretty much every sport, and you speak nearly every language on earth, so I have to ask first, have you ever seen a story like Vegas going from not having a roster 12 months ago to being four wins away from the Stanley Cup right now?
Jim, it's incredible, and it is, in my opinion, a singular story in the modern history of pro sports in our country. It is to that level, because no one saw this coming. The hockey experts did not see it coming. The people even in the organization would not have said this was realistic when the season began. And so I think that as much as obviously they've beaten a number of really quality teams to get to where they're at right now in the Stanley Cup Final, and even, I would hope, hockey fans in those markets, the ones that lost to the Golden Knights, can appreciate what's happening here. This is a remarkable story of a well-constructed team that was even perhaps better constructed than the Golden Knights themselves even realized at the time, and then so well coached by Gerard Gallant. And it's one of the great stories in this context of sports, Jim, because a number of players have just gotten opportunities that did not otherwise exist for them. Hockey is so much based on ice time, opportunity, how many shifts you get, how many offensive zone starts you get, and you're seeing skilled players like William Karlsson and Jonathan Marchessault and Riley Smith and Nate Schmidt on the back end getting confidence, getting opportunity, and thriving on this stage collectively. And they really, truly did bond together as a city and a community since the events of 1 October, right at the very beginning of their season. And to see this group of men from all around the world come together and represent their city so well, it was inspiring to cover, Jim, and I just cannot wait to see what happens next in the story.
John Morosi joining us. You know, John, you mentioned a number of guys, and there's so many different players that you could highlight on that team, but what do you make of the players deciding that Derek Englund would be the guy to accept the Campbell Bowl if they beat Winnipeg, and what has he meant to that team?
He has been so important, and I'm glad you asked about him, Jim, because he is someone that actually played minor league hockey in Las Vegas prior to becoming a Golden Knight. He actually debuted very late in his 20s in the National Hockey League, so he was somebody that had to spend year after year after year in the minor leagues and then finally break through. He's one of those respected voices in the room, probably the most respected one, and I spoke to him actually after Game 5, and I could tell how much it meant to him. When you get that distinction of being either a captain or an acting captain, and again, the Golden Knights don't have a captain, but he played that role in accepting the Campbell Bowl from Bill Daly. When you are the person that does that, it is, in the sport of hockey, I think, probably more meaningful than any other sport that we cover here on a regular basis in our country. It is a title of great honor, and he embodies that with his selflessness, and certainly it was the very first night of the season. Following the events of 1 October, he was the one that took the microphone and spoke to the fans at T-Mobile Arena. So he was the one who began that relationship by speaking so eloquently that night, and now he's the one that actually accepts the Campbell Bowl, and I'm sure, should they win the Stanley Cup, he'll be the one that puts his hands on that first as well. So it's an amazing story of perseverance for him and for his family, and I actually spoke to him as well, Jim, in the last week about what it meant for him as a Vegas resident to see what's happened in that community for hockey, where the Learn to Skate programs have gone from very small numbers to extraordinarily high numbers of kids enrolling. And I'll never forget, Jim, as long as I walk this earth, being at that community rink where they have their practice rink there in Summerlin, Nevada, outside of Vegas, and having fans only being allowed to go in 10 or 12 at a time to just go into the souvenir shop to buy souvenirs and gear on a Wednesday morning, Jim. It's a weekday morning, and they're there lined up out the door because of the fire code. It was just remarkable to see that, and no one can question the authenticity or the true passion that Vegas fans have for their team now after seeing what we've seen now the last several weeks.
John Morosi, my guest. Honestly, John, I've never seen or heard anything like that ever before. You mentioned the Campbell Bowl. Fact is, no team has touched the Campbell Bowl since 2004. So what do you make of the decision to not only touch it, but to lift it and skate around with it?
Yeah, it was really interesting to see that. I, the two things. Number one, I love the fact that here you have a first-year franchise. So really, when you think about it, what place does the superstition and tradition really have to govern the actions of a first-year franchise? That's one part. But actually what Engelin told me and why he actually decided to touch it was that Marc-Andre Fleury, formerly of the Penguins and who has been their best player in these playoffs clearly in goal, Fleury, in 2008, Sidney Crosby did not touch the Prince of Wales Trophy, and the Penguins lost to the Red Wings in the Stanley Cup Final. So the next year, to change up their luck, Sidney Crosby touched the trophy. And then the Penguins did it again in 16 and won it. They did it in 17 and won it. So for Marc-Andre Fleury personally, he had seen it happen more times than actually 3-0 his teams are when they touched the conference championship trophy. And so Fleury had told Engelin, hey, it's always worked for me. I've seen it work this way. Let's do it for us. And Engelin basically said, hey, if it was good enough for Marc-Andre Fleury, it was good enough for me. So that was Fleury was the inspiration and, again, fitting based on his inspired play during these playoffs.
And then Ovechkin did it again last night. John Morosi, my guest. John, I had GM George McPhee on this program earlier this week. I could not be any more impressed with how he's not only built this roster and the culture, but how he's handling all of this success. You spoke with him after winning that series. So what do you make of the job he's done?
Extraordinary. And I think that, Jim, there was some conversation, some line of criticism out there that, oh, well, the rules of the expansion draft were favorable to Vegas. I'm not buying that. Right. I think that they were fair, and then George McPhee made a lot of excellent moves. And when you ask him, as I know you did, and I'm sure he said in response, he always credits the work of his scouts and his front office staff. And spending that year when the Vegas Golden Knights existed as an organization but not as a team on the ice, they were working and seeing as many pro games as they could everywhere. And he made a lot of great decisions. He got Alex Tuch, who's become the second-line player for them and a really reliable power forward and scorer, who was unprotected by the Wild and had played only six NHL games, I believe, before this season. You had players that he developed, he and his scouts developed, an expertise on even beyond what other teams had about their own players, that being Carlson, Marchessault, Smith, Schmidt, and Fleury, of course, was the known commodity, and I think we can't underestimate the fact that that was maybe the one bit of good fortune, that Fleury was that name-brand goaltender who was clearly out there where a team had two good goalies, they were only going to be able to keep one of them, and the Penguins were never able to find that trade partner anywhere else to get Fleury off their roster before the expansion draft to get something back for him. So that was really a key thing there, which really makes you wonder, Jim, how many other teams around the league would have rather traded for Fleury before the expansion draft had they known he was going to bounce back in the way that he did. But McPhee, I got to tell you, I know you had the same experience. He, of course, also built the Capitals in large part, and now he's going to play that team in the Stanley Cup Final. But he is so humble about that. He didn't want to engage in any sort of, well, I'm going to prove them or anything like that. He's too classy to do that. So he's such an impressive executive and really, I think, an extraordinary architect and a great one of the great faces of hockey now in Las Vegas.
You're right, John. When I brought that up with him, that's exactly how he handled that question. So now he is going to face the Capitals. I know that you've been focused on the Western Conference and on baseball, but what are your early thoughts on that matchup?
It's going to be extraordinary. One of the faster Stanley Cup Finals we've ever seen, I believe. The Vegas Golden Knights play fast, and we saw, I think, with the Capitals game as it evolved during the course of the playoffs, they can play fast as well. And I think you've got two great, unmistakably great stories colliding, I believe, in the Stanley Cup Final, Jim, because you've got the extraordinary nature of the Golden Knights, the most successful expansion franchise in North American pro sports history, period, even right now. Even if they would never win another game, they're still the most successful expansion franchise we have ever seen, period. And then you've got on the other side Ovechkin. And finally stamping in the minds of whatever critics remain, and I certainly was not among them, but anybody that doubted, okay, well, can he win a big game? What can he do to lead his team? Well, last night, 62 seconds into the game, boom, goal, Capitals win, lead 1-0 on the road in Game 7, and they go on to win that game 4-0. So to me, to see one of the all-time greats, I think it's an unmistakable storyline for us that when you've got an all-time great player finally chasing that Stanley Cup and finally having an opportunity in the Cup Final, I'm not going to say it's the same level as LeBron when he first got his first opportunity, but it's something similar to that in the context of this sport. So it's a powerful story. Ovechkin has earned it, and he really, I think, proved a lot of naysayers wrong with his performance there in Game 7. So that was the perfect scene setter and tone setter for the Stanley Cup Final.
John Morosi joining us for a few more moments. You know, John, you're essentially the only person in our business that I can pose this question to. But from a journalist standpoint, how similar or different is it when you're covering hockey versus covering baseball?
Great question, Jim. There are certainly some differences. I love the fact that both sports are so international. I love that as we're waiting for off-ice interviews in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you're standing next to the French networks from Canada and other global networks that have come in from Europe, from Finland and Sweden to cover the playoffs. So I love that. It's similar to being around Japanese media and Korean media and Latin American media during the baseball playoffs, which I really love. I think that the players, I'll say one thing about hockey, they are almost always going to give you a better quote when you ask them about their teammates than themselves. The classic hockey quote is always, well, my teammate put it right on my tape, or it was a rebound and I had the easy part. They will almost always say that. So I want to try to maybe get a little more reflection out of them by talking about those that have helped them get there. I think that's one of the great questions that I know I hear all the time on Hockey Night in Canada. Scott Oak is one of the best in the business, and he really poignantly always asks that question in a very unique way about the people that have helped you get there. So I think that's a really great story. Both sports involve moving away from home at an early age. They can be really challenging in that regard, and so I always appreciate the journey and try my best, I guess, to ask them about the people that have helped them get there, because when you leave the Dominican Republic at 16 or you leave a home in Canada or the U.S. at 16 to go play junior hockey, it's a great sacrifice, and I think it really results in a very unique life story.
It's a really interesting point, John. Why do you think that is? Why is it that in the NHL or in hockey, that's the one group of athletes that will always point to the other guy? Ask about the guy in the room. Why is that sport different, and why is that generally the response in that sport?
It's a really good question, Jim, and I think, much like baseball, maybe I'll put it this way, that in basketball, that you may have an odd game where Curry struggles or LeBron struggles, but for the most part, the superstars at this level, they're going to put up their numbers pretty consistently. If you've got a star running back in the NFL, a star quarterback, unless they have a completely awful day, they're still going to throw for 200 or 300 yards, or the run for 100 maybe thereabouts. LeBron's going to get at least 25 in a big game. But in hockey, you can play and do all the right things, but if the ball doesn't bounce the puck doesn't bounce your way in hockey, you may have a 7-game goalless series and still play really well. So I think that humility of the success not being guaranteed is just baked into the way that you have to operate, so that way you don't get too expectant about success. I think baseball is the same way, especially now with all the shifting. This is true, I think, for all players. Mike Trout could scald the ball 4 times, but if the defense is played exactly right and shifted into his hot zones, and it's 4 line drives into the second baseman's glove or the shortstop's glove, you did everything right. You hit line drives, but you failed. And so I think that baseball and hockey are similar in that regard, that the relatively low rate of success. You score 25 goals in the NHL, you're an amazing player. And that's obviously a much lower total than what you're going to score points in basketball or yards in football. So I think it's maybe just the construct of the game and how elusive success can be even when you do everything right.
If you want more of this, remember you can watch John contribute to MLB Network and NHL Network studio programming throughout the entire year. Plus, NHL Network is going to have live pre- and post-game coverage on site throughout the Cup Final. John Morosi, my guest. John, so good to have you back. Appreciate you. And it's always great to have you on the show. John, thank you.
Jim, thanks so much. It's an honor to talk to you as always, my friend, and I really appreciate you bringing me on here at this amazing time of year. So thanks again for the honor of being on the show.
Best time of year, John. Thanks for saying that. Always great to have you on the show. You make the show a hell of a lot better. John Morosi, NHL Network, MLB Network, Fox Sports, Renaissance Man, and an expert on the classic PBS show, Ghost Rider. Man, that dude is smart. He's good. Very, very talented guy. One of the best in our business. So I'm always happy when he says yes when we go back to him down on the program. Let me set up hour number 2 for you because it is wide open. Telephone number first, 1-800-636-8686. Second hour is wide open. Third hour is not. The third hour is a busy hour. It's a jammed up hour in a good way. So if you want to hit something, you want to hit it now. I've got a take on the anthem in the NFL. Did the NFL get that right, or did the NFL butcher that? It's going to be a hot topic. Not a hot take, but a hot topic. And it's going to be polarizing. We'll hit that when we come back. Lots of other things to get to as well. Warriors, Rockets, Celtics, Cavaliers, Melo. Carmelo steps in it. Season's over, doesn't matter. He gets hooked on social media, as only Melo would. And more. Bob Melvin and Chad Millman in the third hour. The week that was in the third hour. Second hour straight ahead. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Do not go anywhere.